Okay, well, you know what I'm fixing to say now, so let's do it. Turn with me, if you will, to the place where this week's Torah portion begins. It's not quite the end of chapter 16. Matter of fact, it's verse 18 of chapter 16 of Devarim, or Deuteronomy. And the very first word is the name of the portion, and the word is Shoftim, which literally means judges. So, by the way, the book of the same name, as you probably recall, is also Shoftim. And it goes like this. It says, Shoftim ve Soterim, you shall make, you shall establish in all your gates, or appoint in all your gates, which Yahuwah your El is giving you, tribe by tribe, and they shall judge the people with righteous judgment. Now, and this is an interesting one. Mishpat is the word that's used there for judgment. And, of course, we know that mishpatim are judgments, and so that's part of statutes, judgments, and commandments. But what's interesting is the righteous word, we know the root here, it's zedek. And so that three-letter shoresh has the understanding of things that are righteous, or the very definition of righteousness. Zadikim, of course, are those people who are righteous, usually because they're walking in obedience to the Creator. And there is a theme that permeates, well, the entire portion, but especially this first part of it here, that has to do with judges and judgment and righteous judgment and what's not. And what interested me about this, and as I go through it, I'll probably be hard-pressed not to at least note the contrast with where we are today. Because we are in a world, in a land that is about as opposite in so many respects from this as you can possibly get. Here we go, verse 19, a case in point. You shall not wrest judgment. You shall not respect persons, nor shall you take a gift. For a gift or a bribe blinds the eyes of the wise and perverts the words of the righteous. Zadikim. And then it says this, and here is another one, Zedek, Zedek, justice, justice, righteousness, righteousness. Well, we got none of that anyway, so it doesn't matter in America, does it? Justice, justice, you shall pursue, that you might live and inherit the land which Yahuwah your El is giving you. Now, it's interesting that here is another one of those places where the word is repeated. And you'll hear all kinds of explanations. I think they're all, at least to some extent, valid. One of them is, he really wants to emphasize it. Justice, justice, as if once just wasn't enough to explain the level to which this is supposed to be pursued. The other thing that you'll hear, and I don't disagree with this either, is that it's describing both the letter and the spirit of the law. In other words, you're not only supposed to do what it says, you're supposed to try to, as best you can, understand why it says what it says, and do that too. And it gives us some examples. These are kind of pagan things, and they smack of, what we see today. You shall not plant an asherah of any kind of tree besides the altar of Yahuwah your El, which you shall make you. Nor shall you set up a pillar, like the Washington Monument, I guess, which Yahuwah your El hates. A phallic symbol, folks, is essentially what a pillar is. And ultimately, there are some elements of that in an asherah tree as well. You shall not sacrifice, says verse 17:1, unto Yahuwah your El, an ox or a sheep or anything where there's a blemish, even any evil thing, for that is an abomination unto Yahuwah your El. There's found in the midst of you, within any of your gates, which Yahuwah your El gives you, a man or a woman that does evil, or does that which is evil in the sight of Yahuwah your El, in transgressing his covenant, you know, say, teaching crap to kids, or committing various abominations and teaching kids that they're supposed to do that, or cutting off their genitalia, or perverting judgment and saying it's God that says it, but it's just not the same one. In other words, examples of this one abound too. But notice, what does he say? If there's a man or woman that does that which is evil in the sight of Yah, you make a president. You let them run, and they don't even have to have a primary. No, that's not what it says either. If they've gone and served other gods and worshipped them, the sun and the moon or any of the host of heaven, which I have commanded you not to, and you find out about it, you've been told that, and you hear it, well, then you're supposed to. Now, I guess if it's on CNN and they're standing there telling you they're proud of it, and they're going to teach it to your kids and they're going to ram it down your throats, it's different. But ordinarily, you see, they were ashamed of this. So you're supposed to inquire diligently and behold, check it out, see if it's true. The thing is then made certain there's such abomination really being done in Israel. Oh, wait a second. See, that's why we were kicked out. Ah, see, it doesn't matter because we're kicked out of the land. This land is perverted and that's okay. Or is it? Anyway, you bring forth that man or the woman who's done this evil thing unto your gates. That man or woman, you shall stone them with stones that they die. So this is admittedly one of those places where it is an explicit commandment that is to be done in the land of Israel. And in a way, it's a shame. And I guess what we see is this is what happens when the people that do these kind of things overrun, and they overrun the courts, and they overrun the educational institutions, and they overrun the FBI and the other three-letter agencies, and they overrun the whorehouse and the Senate and the House and you name it. And they do all of these things that are abomination in His sight. This is where we are. At the mouth of two or three witnesses shall he that is to die be put to death. At the mouth of one witness, he shall not be put to death. So one witness is not sufficient. By the way, back when we had a constitution, this is what was required when it came to treason, was two witnesses, interestingly, similarly. The hand of the witnesses shall be the first upon him to put him to death, and afterward the hand of all the people. So it says, you shall put away the evil from the midst of you. I guess you could argue this hasn't happened, and we see the wicked fruit of it. If there arises a matter that's too hard for you in judgment, between blood and blood, plea and plea, stroke and stroke, or even matters of controversy within your gates, then you shall arise, get yourself up to the place where Yahuwah or El shall choose, and it shall come unto the priests, the Levites, and unto the judge that shall be in those days, and you inquire, and they will declare to you the sentence of judgment. And you shall do according to the tenor of that sentence, which they shall declare unto you from the place which Yahuwah shall choose, and you will observe to do all that they shall teach you, according to the Torah which they shall teach you, and according to the judgment which they shall tell you, you shall do. You are not to turn aside from the sentence which they declare unto you, not to the right hand, nor to the left. Now the man, it says, it does presumptuously, and not hearkening unto that Kohen, the priest, that stands to minister there before Yahuwah, your El, or unto judge, that man shall die. And this is how you shall exterminate the evil from Israel. All the people shall hear and fear and do no more presumptuously. And I guess it keeps kind of almost resonating off the page, doesn't it? Since people don't fear, and they know that they can do presumptuously, and the law doesn't make a damn bit of difference, and justice you don't pursue, especially not in New York, people do hear, and they don't fear, and they do presumptuously, or worse. They run amok, and they start just killing folks, and that's where we're at, too. When you've come into the land which Yahuwah your El gives you and possess it and you dwell there, you shall say, ah, you know what? I like to set a king over me, like all the other nations that are around about me. And if you in any wise set a king over you, it's one whom Yahuwah your El shall choose. And it will be one from among your brethren that you set as king over you. You may not put a foreigner over you who is not your brother. So you, in other words, you don't get a fake birth certificate, and you don't get somebody that's not even a fake citizen. Boy, have we had anything else running for a while? It's kind of amazing. Well, at least not among the communist side of the equation. It is interesting, folks, as you go through this, this is the thing that I think should leap off the page at us. Just about everything in here is antithetical to what we're seeing happening today. Oh, okay, when you get this king, okay, he can sniff hair all he wants, it says. No, it doesn't say that. But he is not to multiply horses unto himself, nor cause the people to return to Egypt, to the end that he should multiply horses. So in other words, the idea was, don't multiply so many horses that you got enough horses that you can go back to Egypt. Because Yahuwah has said to you, you shall not go back that way anymore. Nor shall he multiply wives to himself, that his heart not turn away. Okay, pause there. Notice that this is a commandment for kings, and one of the things that kings had a tendency to do, because they had more money and they had more power, was to say, hey, I want to basically kind of scarf up all the available good-looking women. So there is a commandment against that. It does not, by the way, say that he cannot add wives. As you know, David had probably something like 13 to 17 wives. He was called a man after Yah's own heart. So there's a difference, evidently, between adding and multiplying wives. And, of course, when you read this, you remember there was Solomon. And it does seem that Solomon must have multiplied wives because, in fact, in his case, they did turn his heart away. He did build pagan edifices, and he did worship at those. And he did, in fact, his heart did turn away from Yah. Fortunately, before he was dead, he did manage to see the error of his ways. And he wrote, at least looks like he's the one that wrote the book of Ecclesiastes. Okay, so he's not to multiply wives, nor, it says, shall he greatly multiply unto himself silver and gold. So he can actually do a little bit of multiplication, but he's just not to greatly multiply, not meod kind of multiplication of silver and gold. And arguably Solomon did that too. It shall be when he sits upon the throne of his kingdom. Now this is the one that I think is really kind of fascinating. And notice that it looks like a lot of kings of both the northern kingdom, northern and southern kingdom, Israel and Judah, failed in this regard. There are some that probably and notably did, and they were men after his own heart. But it says that when the king sits upon his throne, he is supposed to write himself a copy of this Torah in a sefer, a scroll, out of that which is before the Kohanim, the Levites. So he's to write it out in his own hand. And it shall be with him, and he shall read therein all the days of his life, so that he may learn to fear Yahuwah Hazel, to keep all the words of this Torah and these statutes, and to do them. So I think the real interesting part about this is, unlike what we have today, where the king basically says, well, the hell with the Constitution and the horse that it rode in on. Y'all don't have rights. You don't have any of those things that I'm not supposed to do. I'll do them if I feel like them. No, the idea is that, and by the way, the founders pointed this out to the king. You're not above the law as well. The law applies to all of the people, and in fact, this is why he is to keep all the words of this Torah and do them. And it tells us in the next verse, so that his heart is not lifted up above his brethren, so that he does not turn aside from the commandment, not to the right hand or to the left, to the end that he may prolong his days in the kingdom, he and his children, in the midst of Israel. Now, on to the Kohanim, the Levites, all the tribe of Levi. Remember, they have no inheritance or portion with Israel. They shall eat the offerings of Yahuwah made by fire, and that's his inheritance. That's their inheritance from him. They shall have no inheritance among their brethren, none of the land, in other words, like the other tribes did. Yahuwah is their inheritance, as he has spoken unto them. And this shall be the priest's due from the people, from them that offer a sacrifice, whether it's an ox or a sheep. They give unto the priest the shoulder, the two cheeks, and the maw. The first fruits of your corn, of your wine, of your oil, of the fleece of your sheep, you give to him. For Yahuwah your El has chosen him out of all your tribes to stand to minister in the name of Yahuwah, him and his sons forever. Ha'olam. And if there is a Levite that comes from any of the gates out of all Israel, where he sojourns, and he comes with all the desire of his soul to the place which Yahuwah shall choose, then he shall minister in the name of Yahuwah Zel, as all his brethren Levites do, who stand before Yahuwah. There they shall have like portions to eat, beside that which is due according to their father's houses. So when you have come into the land which Yahuwah your El gives you, you shall not learn to do after the abominations of the nations that are there. This is another commandment that he has now repeated more than once. This is why those nations were vomited out. We've already been told. Don't learn to do likewise. There shall not be found among you anyone that makes his son or daughter pass through the fire, or anyone that uses divination, or a soothsayer, or an enchanter, or a sorcerer, or a charmer, or someone that consults a ghost or a familiar spirit, or is a necromancer. They deal with the dead. For whoever does these things is an abomination, toiba, unto Yahuwah. And because of these abominations, that, it says, is why Yahuwah your El is driving them out from before you. You shall, in fact, be wholehearted with Yahuwah your El. These nations, the ones that you are fixing to dispossess, they do those things. They hearken unto soothsayers, unto diviners, but not for you. As for you, Yahuwah your El has not suffered you to do so. Now, this next section is also one of these interesting ones. It has a number of things about it that are pretty unique. Certainly, it gets referenced in places like Acts 3 as well, because it is a clear prophecy from Moshe of what he says will happen. A prophet will Yahuwah your El raise up unto you. He's going to raise up a prophet like unto me, like unto Moshe. From the midst of you, of your brethren, he will be a prophet like unto me. Unto him you shall hearken. Shamar, hear and obey. Now, notice, this is an interesting observation too. This is the only place, the sages believe and note, and certainly seems true, where we actually see Moshe refer to himself, self-describe, if you will, as a prophet. So he refers to a prophet like unto me that Yahuwah will raise up. According to all that you did, desire of Yahuwah your El, in the day of assembly there in Horeb, okay, he's reminding them, you guys asked for this. You said, don't let me hear again the voice of Yahuwah my El, nor see this great fire anymore, lest I die. Ooh, it scared the heck out of me. And people did, I suspect there were some dirty drawers up on that mountain. They basically said, nope, can't handle this, don't do this anymore. Let's just have somebody else talk to us. You talk to us, Moshe, and then later we'll have somebody else, prophet-like unto Moshe. That is what he is describing here. If you remember, Yah said, yep, that is a good idea. In fact, that's what will happen. Yehuah then said unto me, they have well said that which they have spoken. So, yep, it's a good idea. I will raise up among them a prophet from among their brethren, like unto you, and I will put my words in his mouth, and he shall speak unto them all that I shall command him. You might even say the Torah made flesh, folks. And it shall come to pass that whoever will not hearken unto my words, which he shall speak in my name, I'll require it of him. But that prophet that shall speak a word presumptuously in my name, which I have not commanded him to speak, or that shall speak in the name of other gods, that same prophet shall die. Now here is another reference to the fact that if Yahuwah is going to say there will be a prophet like unto Moshe, he is going to put his words in his mouth. That prophet will speak Torah. Notice the very first words, literally, in his first public address that came out of Yeshua's mouth. I did not come. Don't think that I came to destroy, to do away with the Torah or the prophets. Nope, not so much as a single yoder tittle is going to be done away with as long as heaven and earth still exist until all is fulfilled. In other words, two things, neither of which have happened yet. Heaven and earth still exist, and all is not yet fulfilled. Or, Damascus is still a city. The two sticks aren't yet one, and if he's coming back, all is not fulfilled. So what does that mean? It means that if somebody comes and says, you know, Yeshua did away with the law, I think they better read chapter 18, verse 20 very, very carefully. Some supposed prophet that speaks a word presumptuous in my name, Jesus did away with the law. Jesus changed the rules about marriage, about Sabbath, about food. He did away with all that stuff. That's why we're not under the law anymore, because Jesus did away. The prophet that shall speak a word presumptuously in my name, which I have not commanded him to speak. As a matter of fact, folks, I will go, because he does, I'll go note that in Deuteronomy 4, 2 and 12, 32, he says, furthermore, if you add to or subtract from, that is against my commandment. So somebody tells you Jesus did away with the law, took out a yod or a tittle when he said he wasn't, what does he say? That same prophet shall die. I would say this is serious stuff. Now, if you say in your heart, how shall we know the word which Yahuwah has not spoken? Now, this one's interesting. There's more than one place in Scripture where we see indications. We've mentioned Deuteronomy 13 already, but here's one where it says, if the prophet speaks in the name of Yahuwah, he speaks in the name of Yahuwah. And if the thing doesn't happen, if it doesn't come to pass, that is not a thing which Yahuwah has spoken. In other words, it is something which he has not spoken. As a matter of fact, the prophet has spoken it presumptuously. And this is kind of kind, I guess. This is, don't be afraid of that guy. Don't be afraid of him. Now, what's interesting, of course, and this is always the criticism that I would think of, wait a minute, we have a lot of prophets that we know are prophets. They're good prophets. You got Ezekiel, Jeremiah, Isaiah, and many of the others as well. Daniel, notably. There are things in their prophecies we can look at and say, well, a lot of them have happened. Some of them have happened once, are going to happen again. But, Daniel, obviously, and several others, there are things that they have spoken of that we know are going to happen that have not yet. So how do we know? It's an interesting conundrum, isn't it? I guess one of the things is we can see whether or not they're consistent with Scripture and whether they're lying about some of the other things, like saying that he did away with his own law or that they come in the name of other gods. When Yehuyarel cuts off the nations, those whose land he is giving to you, and you do succeed them, and you dwell in their cities and in their houses, you shall separate for yourself three cities in the midst of your land which Yehuyarel is giving you to possess. Okay, so these are called the cities of refuge. And you prepare thee the way, divide the borders of the land which Yehuyarel causes you to inherit into three parts, a place for every manslayer to flee. This is the case of the manslayer, so that he can flee thither and live. And this basically would be the kind of person who might accidentally kill his neighbor unawares. He did not hate him in times past. In other words, there's no reason to suspect that he was looking for an opportunity to do him in. As when a man goes into the forest with his neighbor to hew some wood, going to go cut down some trees, and he fetches a stroke with his axe to cut down the tree, but uh-oh, right? This is the example that's given more than once. The head slips off from the halve of the axe handle, in other words, and it flies through the air and hits his neighbor, and he dies. Well, then that fellow can flee to one of these three cities and live. lest the avenger of blood pursue the manslayer while his heart is hot, while his blood is still flowing. You killed my brother, you dirty rat, that kind of thing. Overtake him, because the way is long, and smite him mortally, whereas he did not deserve to die, inasmuch as he had not hated him in times past. So what Scripture is doing is making it very clear here, it's not done yet, that this idea is a manslayer who is not guilty of what we would now call murder in the first degree. He did not hate him in times past, he didn't lay in wait, he didn't plot it, he didn't have a reason for us to suspect that he really did want this person dead. But it was an accident, an honest accident, and it was sad, but it happened. Then we need a place for him to flee where he can live. So I command you, says Yah, you shall separate these three cities. And if Yehuyael enlarges your border, as he has sworn to your fathers, and he gives you all the land which he promised to give to your fathers, well, if you keep all this commandment to do it, which I command you to this day, now notice, he's saying if. Now we recognize, because we remember the history, we have never seen Israel expand to all of the borders that it was supposed to. Not ever. Not yet. That's one of those things that has not yet been fulfilled that Yeshua was referring to. So all is not yet fulfilled. Okay, so if he was going to expand the land, but he has not yet. Well, if you keep all this commandment to do it, which I command you to this day, to love Yehuyael, to walk always in his ways, then you'll add three more cities for you besides the first three, that innocent blood not be shed in the midst of your land, which Yehuah gives you for an inheritance. So there is no blood upon you. Remember, the life is in the blood. Now, if any man hates his neighbor, though, and lies in wait for him, and rises up against him, and smites him mortally so that he dies, and he, scumbag that he is, if he tries to flee to one of these cities, then the elders of that city will send and fetch him, and deliver him into the hand of that very avenger of blood that wants him dead, so that, in fact, he may die. Your eye shall not pity him, but you shall put away the blood of the innocent from Israel, that it may go well with you. By the way, this is a theme we're going to see more than once in here, too. I will suggest, isn't it interesting? It kind of goes along with justice, justice you shall pursue, except in New York and except in America where, if you're the kind of person that speaks in the name of other gods and does things that are an abomination to him, you get to be, well, who knows? Congress critter, or a FBI agent, or maybe a fake president. You shall not remove your neighbor's land market, which has been said in time of old, in your inheritance which you shall inherit, in the land which Yehuah gives you to possess. So you don't move the landmark in the land that has been set as of the time when they're going to do this division among the tribes. One witness, it says, shall not rise up against a man for any iniquity or any sin. In any sin that he sins. Okay? Not sufficient. One witness is not enough. At the mouth of two or three witnesses shall a matter be established. Now, how about the following? How about if they're the kind of person that, puts their hand on a Bible and lies? Ooh. In other words, okay, well, here's what it says. If an unrighteous witness rises up against any man to bear perverted witness against him, he lies. Said somebody did something and they didn't. Then both the men, between whom there is controversy, shall stand before Yahuwah, before the priests and the judges, that shall be in those days. And the judges shall inquire diligently. This is why justice, justice, you shall pursue, it seems. And behold, if that witness turns out to be a false witness, committed perjury, in other words, no, he doesn't get to be president. Well, he's not supposed to be. He has testified falsely against his brother. Then you shall do unto him as he had purposed to do unto his brother. So essentially, I love this. This is the kind of thing that if we actually considered this and did this, you can imagine we would not have nearly the problems that we do. Somebody lies, they commit perjury, they try to get somebody and convict them of something, lie about them, they did something. You did it, and in fact, it's they did it themselves. How many times have we seen that of late, right? Then you do to him what he thought to do to you, or to the guy who he was testifying against. He suffers the penalty that he was trying to subject the innocent person to by lying about it. What a concept. Thus it says, you shall put away the evil from the midst of you, and those that remain shall hear and fear. Rather than like the other police officers that say, oh, there's a thin blue line here, ha ha, we can commit perjury and get away with it. We can do all these kind of things and get away with it. And, no, people are supposed to instead hear and fear, and henceforth no more commit any such evil in the midst of you. What happens today? Well, they get to be justices. They get to be judges. They get to sit on in the House and the Senate, and they get to be president, and they get to do all kinds of things, and they basically get to lie with impunity and profit by it, too. Your eye shall not pity, it says. Life for life, eye for eye, tooth for tooth, hand for hand, foot for foot. And the sages would say what this is describing is the concept of measure for measure. Chapter 20 takes a slight change of pace, and this one is interesting as well because this is very different than what we see and what we've understood for quite a while too. When you go forth to battle against your enemies, you got to see you see all these horses and chariots, and you got lots of people that look out and whoa, here is a people more numerous than we are. Don't be afraid of them. Don't be afraid of them. For Yahuwah is with you. He is the one who brought you up out of the land of Egypt. Okay, so that's good news, right? It shall be when you draw unto battle, and the Kohen shall approach, and he shall speak to the people. And here is the kind of thing, here's exactly the thing he's going to say. He says, "Hear, O Israel, Shema Israel, today you are drawing into battle against your enemies. Don't let your heart be faint. Fear not." You could say Kazak, right? That's the singular form. Don't be alarmed, nor be frightened of them, of those folks. For Yahuwah, he is the one that goes forth with you, to fight for you against your enemies, to save you. You're not going into battle alone. Your officers, they will speak to the people, and they're supposed to say the following. Now, is there a man here that's built a new house? Built a new house, but hadn't dedicated it. Well, let him go home. Return to his house, lest he die in battle, and another man dedicate that house that he built. Now, we got a man here that maybe he's planted a vineyard, but he hasn't yet used the fruit from the vineyard, hasn't made wine or grape jelly with it or whatever. Let him go and return to his house, lest he too die in battle, and another man use the fruit from his vineyard. Now, what man is there that may have betrothed a wife, but he has not taken her, he has not consummated that union yet? Then let him go and return to his wife, lest he die in the battle, and another man take her. So essentially he's saying there's all kinds of folks that are going to be excused from the battle because they have either a new house, new vineyard, or a new wife. Head on home. Take care of those things. The officers then shall speak further unto the people. This is where we're going to have a little bit of a change of pace. Maybe a lot of change of pace. And they'll say to the folks, what man here is there that is fearful and faint-hearted? Got any wimps and weenies out there? Got any of the kind of people that would be today's Navy? Today's army, they would make great officers and DEI candidates. Got any of those people that you know don't know any better, but they don't even know whether they're a man or a woman? Faint-hearted? That's being too kind. You got anybody that's just plain not worthy to go into battle? Let them go and return to their house, lest their brother's heart be as fearful and melt like theirs do, or maybe lest he do something else in battle that would cause a whole bunch of people to die and. Oh, again, you read this, folks, you have to ask yourself, what the hell happened to America? What happened to a country that used to actually have, well, pursue justice? Remember, it's joke nowadays, the Superman theme, truth, justice, and the American way. No more. All right, it shall be, it says, back to this, what doesn't happen in today's Navy. It shall be when the officers have made an end of speaking to the people, the captains of hosts shall be appointed at the head of the people. Now, when you draw nigh to a city to fight against it, then first proclaim peace to it. It shall be, if it makes an answer of peace and it opens its gates to you, then all the people that are found therein shall become tributary unto you and shall serve you. Now, this is pretty strong stuff. Okay, now notice, this is not necessarily the people that he is saying, these are the folks that aren't going to live. These are people that happen to be there, but the land is going to be taken, and this city is going to fall. It can fall with an offer of peace, or it can fall the other way. If they choose to say, yep, we accept the offer of peace and surrender, that's literally what's being done, surrender, they open the gates, then they will serve you as tributary. And if they will not make peace with you, but instead they want to war with you, then they're going to get it. You'll besiege it. When Yahuwah delivers it into your hand, there's no doubt about it, folks, he will. That's what's going to happen. Then you shall smite every male thereof with lefi kerev, the mouth of the sword. The sword will literally devour blood, the lifeblood of every man, every male. Notice it doesn't say a male above a certain age. It says every single male. Wow. But the women, the little ones, and the cattle that's in the city, all of the spoil thereof, you shall take for a prey unto yourself. And you shall eat the spoil of your enemies, which Jehoiarel is giving you. So the animals and the women and the young'uns, that becomes spoil, along with some of the other things that they would have, obviously. This you shall do unto the cities, all the cities, which are very far off from you, which are not of the cities of these nations. So basically what he's saying is, remember, there are some cities that are going to get this offer of peace. There are other ones, on the other hand, no, they don't deserve to live. These cities, the cities of these people that Jehoiarel is giving you for an inheritance, you shall save nothing alive that breathes, but you shall utterly destroy them. In case there's any doubt, here we go. They are the Hittite and the Amorite, the Canaanite, the Perizzite, the Hivite, and the Jebusite, as Jehoiarel has commanded you, that they do not teach you to do after all of their abominations. What, you mean the kind of crap that gets taught in Sun God Day school today and the bunnies and the eggs and all the folks? It is amazing, isn't it, how much paganism has crept into society. We have literally, look at the days of the week, look at the names of, so that they do not teach you to do all the things that American kids are being taught to do. It's funny, I remember when I was in high school, you could teach all kinds of stuff about Norse gods and Hera and Zeus and Greek gods and Roman gods, but don't you dare talk about the Bible. They teach the abominations, which they have done under their L, and as a result, you go and sin against Jehoiarel. Well, there you go. Duh. When you besiege one of those cities a long time, making war against it to take it, you shall not destroy the trees thereof by taking an axe to them. You can eat of them, but you shall not cut them down. For is the tree of the field man, that it should be besieged of you. This is interesting. Okay, there's got apple trees there. You got some fruit trees, some fig trees, pomegranate trees. Don't cut them down. Only the trees of which you know they're not trees for food. You can use their wood. You can cut them down so you can build bulwarks against the city that makes war with you until it falls. So you can use the trees that are not good for food in making war against that city. Now, chapter 21 is interesting, too. And this essentially is the place where the portion ends. After this one, I guess I would say, I've always thought this was kind of a poignant example. It reminds me, well, it is. This is a tough one. It goes like this: if there's someone found slain in the land which Jehoiarel is giving you to possess, out there laying in the field, poor dead person, just dead, and doesn't know who has smitten him, in other words, you don't know how he died, what happened, then the elders and the judges shall come forth, and they shall measure. They literally measure to the nearest cities, which are round about the person who's been slain. And it shall be that the city which is nearest to the dead body, the slain man, even the elders of that city, shall take a heifer of the herd, which has not been wrought with, and which is not drawn in the yoke. In other words, they take a heifer that's kind of similar in this respect to the red heifer. It has not been yoked up. It has not been used for a beast of burden. So it's a young heifer, probably. The elders of the city will bring down that heifer into a rough valley, which may neither be plowed nor sown, and shall break that heifer's neck there in the valley. So poor heifer is going to just die out here in this rough valley. And the priests, the sons of Levi, shall come near, for those are the ones that Jehoiarel has chosen to minister unto him, and to bless the name of Yahuwah. And according to their word shall every controversy and every stroke be. So these are the ones that are making the decision. They're going to be doing this as well. All the elders of that city that are nearest to the slain man, they come. They are to wash their hands over the heifer whose neck was broken in the valley. And this heifer has a name. It's called the Eglah Arufa. Eglah Arufa. And the idea, and I've always thought this was, again, poignant is the word that comes to mind. You think, oh, this poor heifer, it didn't do anything to deserve this. I guess the point is neither, we don't know. We don't know what happened with this guy. This dead body that's been slain, that's laying out here in some field. But it's an outrage. It's an outrage, and it is to awaken us. It's like a slap on the face or a glass of cold water thrown in the face. These elders that have just washed their hands over the body of the heifer whose neck was broken are supposed to speak, and they say the following: our hands have not shed this blood, nor have our eyes seen it. In other words, we didn't even directly, much less directly, we didn't have anything to do with this stranger. Because why? Because what the implication here is that, how did this happen? Why was nobody paying attention? Is this the kind of thing that is allowed to happen in our land, near our city? It is an outrage. Now, never mind, of course, if the city literally invites these people in and says, here, take the keys, start killing people, and, leave your feces and your needles in the street, and just... This is about, again, as opposite of the way America today has worked as it can be, folks. We don't know who did this, but we are literally washing our hands of it because this is a tragedy, an outrage. And here's what they say then. Forgive, O Yahuwah, your people Israel, whom you have redeemed. Do not suffer this innocent blood to remain in the midst of your people Israel. As opposed to, for example, literally drenching the nation in the blood. Bringing a van to the DNC and say, hey, you want some blood? Let's put it right here on the streets of Chicago. Come on in, let's kill us some babies. We don't give a damn. We know right where they're dying. Ha ha ha. What a contrast, folks. What a contrast. Forgive, O Yahuwah, your people Israel, whom you've redeemed. Do not suffer innocent blood to remain in the midst of your people Israel. And that blood, he says, shall be forgiven them. Here's the last verse in the portion. And ask yourself, doesn't this pretty well summarize it? Doesn't this, I guess I would say it this way. I read this and I think, justice, justice you shall pursue. Hell no! Not in the swamp, not in America with a K, not in any place, folks, that any of the people that we are watching destroy the very concept of the rule of law have anything to do with it. Innocent blood, they are drenched in it, they wallow in it, they drink it, they love it. If you're not angry about it, you're not paying attention. Because I guarantee you he is, and listen to the last verse in the portion. So shall you put away the innocent blood from the midst of you when you do that which is right in the eyes of Yahuwah. Not in the swamp you don't. Justice, justice you shall pursue. No, you don't. I look at this, I got to be honest. I'm wondering, how the hell is it that the United States has not already been judged? But I can't. I remember the line from Thomas Jefferson. Indeed, I tremble for my country, said Jefferson, when I think that God is just, that his justice cannot sleep forever. This has not happened. Sadly. Tragically. The blood that is being shed upon this land, the blood that is literally being lusted for upon this land. They made it a sacrament, for crying out loud. They elevate the very idea of, oh, justice, justice, okay. No, the appearance of impropriety, hell. We rig elections and we send people to prison for daring to think that they have anything to say about it. So you shall put away the innocent blood from the midst of you when you do that which is right in the eyes of Yahuwah. Well, I guarantee you one thing, folks. You sure as hell won't get elected to a national office in this country with an attitude like that. And that speaks volumes.